Chapter 15. With Genius dead, and his forces either dead or paralyzed, we were able to get through the Great Forest unmolested. I felt exhausted after the ordeal with the spiders, crawling through the claustrophobic tunnels and fighting the Night Elf guards, but I somehow caught a second wind as Amrila and I picked our way through the last of the woods. Soon, I'd see Ibsith, and on top of that, I was a rich man now with a sexy half-demon companion. It was hard not to feel optimistic.
Why didn't you tell me you knew where the missing princess was?
The horned beauty asked as we entered the tunnel that would lead us to the iron door. I didn't know you very well yet. I shrugged. I also didn't know I was a wanted man then.
And now that you do know me?
The Zinkari woman asked with a sly smile. Ibsith has been with me on the surface, I snorted. I guess we're married, too, but I don't know all the particulars of Night Elf customs.
Oh, really?
Amrila said as her teasing expression flickered. Oh, yeah, sorry I didn't tell you earlier. I know that—
Look.
She cleared her throat.
It's obvious there's something between us, and, well, it's not as if you're an assistant baker with a barmaid wife. You are very interesting.
Obvious there's something between us? I smirked.
Yes?
She bit her lip and crossed her arms.
Isn't there?
There is, I admitted. I think you're, like, super beautiful, amazingly sexy, absolutely adorable, and crazy good with your swords. I love your sense of humor, and you're really smart. Amrila's mouth hung open for a good 5 seconds as she stared at me with her dark eyes. Then she seemed to realize she was gawking, and she closed her mouth with a loud clacking of her teeth.
Are you telling the truth?
She whispered as she looked down at her boots. Yeah, I said. You are really—
Men don't say such things.
She huffed.
I know I'm nice to look at, and plenty of men want to fuck me, but no one's called me adorable or said they thought I was smart or that they liked my sense of humor.
No one has? I raised an eyebrow. That can't possibly be true. You're delightful. I really, really like you, and you saved my life more than a few times in the last 12 hours.
Men say what they want when they want to fuck.
She kicked a small rock with her shoe, and it rolled over to my boot.
Also, you saved my life, too, which, if I am being honest, no one else has ever done for me.
We make a good team, partner. I smiled at her.
You didn't tell me about the princess. Why should I believe you when you say such nice things about me?
You didn't believe me about the surface, I said, but I'm about to show you. Then you'll know I'm telling the truth about everything. Deal?
I suppose that can be our deal,
she said as she met my eyes again. I had to take out my flashlight as we'd left the dim blue light of the glowing mushrooms, and the black-eyed woman covered her face and swore in the guttural language she'd used to cause the cave-in. Sorry, I said as I pointed the beam away from her, but I need it, or else I'll be blind in these tunnels. Just try to stay behind me while your eyes adjust.
Okay, Eddie,
she grunted.
Lead the way.
I quickened my pace until we came to the hidden door, and then I gestured at it with a jokingly grand flourish. Here we are, I grinned.
It's a wall,
Amrila said, and her expression was unimpressed as she stared at the rock face. But I have this. I pulled the iron key from my pocket and inserted it into the crack that hid the keyhole. Then the horned woman's eyes grew large as she watched the door swing open on silent hinges. We stepped through the door, and Amrila stopped to watch the door shut, with a look of wonder on her beautifully sharp face. I stood in the round cave on the other side of the iron door as Amrila stepped up to the door. She ran her long, tapered fingers over the letters carved into the metal.
So, the lost tribe of dwarves really did seal the way to the surface.
She breathed.
I always thought it was just a story.
Can you read it? I asked with a raised eyebrow. What does it say?
A direct translation wouldn't exist,
the horned woman explained.
But it's a warning not to open the door. It says great evil lies deep within.
A great evil? I repeated. I wonder what they meant.
The lost tribe disappeared around the time the Night Elves took over,
Amrila said as she cocked her head to the side.
This could be referring to them.
Maybe, I agreed, but that didn't seem quite right for some reason. It could be that I didn't know enough about the history of the Gloom and what the Night Elves did to gain their great power over the other races. All wars are bloody, but to carve into an iron door, "Hey, great evil lives down here," seemed like an extreme statement meant to last for all time. Did the elves commit that level of atrocities, or was the writing meant to warn people in the future about something worse than the Night Elf tribes? "Come on," I said as I turned toward the surface. "We can figure all that out some other time. Right now, I just want you to see my home and meet Ibsith." This time, I was the one who led the red-skinned woman through the network of tunnels, past the cave with the Nyctor bones, and finally to the ladder that would take us back to the sunlight and open skies. "Take this, and shine it at the little door up there, so I can see what I'm doing," I told Amrila as I handed her the flashlight. The black-eyed woman hesitantly took the heavy flashlight and held it as far away from her face as possible as she squinted up at the metal door, and I felt a pang of sympathy for her. Amrila seemed to be even more sensitive to light than Ibsith had been, so I'd have to come up with a solution for her if she was going to stick around. "I'm not sure what time of day it is up there," I warned the Zinkari woman, "but you should be prepared for it to be brighter than anything you've seen before. We should try to be as quiet as we can, and I'll get you into the house as quickly as we can."
"I'm already regretting this decision,"
Amrila muttered, but from her excited tone and the slight smile on her face, I knew she didn't really mean it. I climbed up the ladder as the horned woman pointed the beam of the flashlight at the metal hatch, and then I unlocked it and slowly swung open the door. The light above was dusky, but I wasn't sure if it was sunrise or sunset. Time had lost all meaning in the gloom. Maybe it would be a good idea to get a watch in the future that wouldn't rely on a satellite connection like my phone. The good news was, it wasn't the full light of day, which would make things easier for Amrila. "Come on up," I whispered down the hole to the horned woman. Amrila clicked off the flashlight, put it in the pouch on her hip, and then slowly came up the ladder. Even in the dim, ruddy light, the red-skinned woman was still squinting, and she shaded her eyes with her hand once she was all the way up.
"Do you live in a forest?"
Amrila asked as she looked around at the thick lilac bushes that surround the tunnel entrance. "No," I snorted, and I closed and locked the metal door behind us. "These are just some bushes I left up to hide the entrance. Come on, I'll show you where I live." I took Amrila's hand and led her out of the bushes and into the backyard. I wasn't worried about any neighbors seeing us since I'd put up the new, higher fence, but as we came out of the bushes, the Zinkari woman looked around at the yard, then the back of the trailer, then up at the sky, and she gasped. It was overcast, and at the edges of the horizon that we could see from the yard, the soft gray clouds were stained pink and orange by the sun.
I thought you said there was no ceiling here.
The horned woman bantered to cover her initial shock.
Even a high ceiling is still a ceiling.
Those are clouds, I chuckled. They're not there all the time.
Clouds?
Amrila asked. Like a thick mist, but hundreds of feet up, I explained as I looked up. The light on the back porch suddenly lit up, and the screen door swung open and shut again as Ibsith came running out in a tight-fitting pink t-shirt, no bra and lavender leggings. The Night Elf woman came bounding across the yard, and her lush figure bounced and jiggled as she threw herself into my arms.
Oh, Eddie!
She breathed as she pressed herself against my chest and lifted up onto her tiptoes to kiss me.
When you didn't come home yesterday morning, I began to fear the worst.
I'm okay, I said between kisses. Just got held up. I'm so sorry to worry you like that.
Oh, you are home.
The beautiful blue-skinned woman purred.
That's all that matters to me.
I also have someone I want you to meet, I said, as I pulled away from my wife and turned toward the Zinkari woman standing behind us. This is Amrila. She helped me down in the gloom. Not sure I would have made it back in one piece without her. Ibsith looked around at the horned woman, and her eyes grew wide for a moment as she took in the other woman's red skin and black horns. Amrila stared right back at the Night Elf woman with equal apprehension, until Ibsith let go of me, ran to the Zinkari woman, and threw her arms around Amrila in an enthusiastic hug.
Thank you for bringing my husband home safely,
the white-haired woman cooed.
I owe you a life debt for what you have done.
Amrila seemed to be caught off guard by Ibsith's show of gratitude, and she held her arms out to the sides at first, but she reluctantly put an arm around the elven woman when it was clear Ibsith didn't plan to let go right away.
That, isn't necessary,
the red-skinned woman said as she awkwardly patted Ibsith's back.
I mostly did it for... Well, I guess it started out that I wanted some coin, but now... I thank you, all the same,
my wife said as she released the horned woman. We should probably get inside, I grinned as I watched the women greet each other. I need a shower real bad, and I'm sure Amrila would probably like one too.
Amrila?
The elven woman said in a bright tone.
What a beautiful name. Thank you, Lady Ibsith.
The horned woman said, and she flashed her sharpened teeth in a devilish grin.
It means she who devours souls. My mother gave it to me. It is a lovely, strong name.
Ibsith nodded and seemed unfazed as she put an arm around the red-skinned woman and led her to the back door, while I followed.
I can tell we will become the best of friends.
Amrila shot me a panicked look over her shoulder, and I just grinned and shrugged in reply. I had a feeling Ibsith would make the black-eyed woman her best friend, whether Amrila liked it or not. We entered the trailer, and Ibsith rushed in ahead to turn off some of the lights so Amrila would be more comfortable. What time is it? I asked as I stepped through the back door and looked around at the microwave clock.
It is early evening, my love.
The elven woman replied. Sure enough, the clock read 8:06 p.m.
This is a wonderful home.
Amrila gasped as she looked around at the rust-collared carpet and furniture.
Why do you bother with troll hides when you already have all of this? Look at the couches and rugs. Wow, I'm very impressed. Eddie!
The white-haired woman gasped as she turned to me.
You killed a troll. A gem troll at that.
The horned woman added.
He did have me to help him, though.
Amrila's tone of voice as she said that last part was assertive, as if it were important for Ibsith to know she'd been there, too. That thing was huge. I chuckled as I set down my backpack and rifle. It was pretty scary.
Oh, my brave warrior.
The blue-skinned woman giggled as she threw her arms around me. I missed you too, I said and hugged my wife close. But I really need a shower. Maybe you could lend Amrila some clothes and show her around our home. Then once we're all cleaned up, we'll go celebrate.
Yes, yes, we must celebrate your victories. Come with me, dearest Amrila.
Ibsith said as she took the horned woman's hand and whisked her into the bedroom. Amrila was a little taller than Ibsith, and not as curvy, so I wondered how my wife's clothes would fit the slender Zinkari woman. But I was sure they'd figure it out. I went into the bathroom and turned on the shower so the water could warm up, and then I peeled off my clothes. I could hear Ibsith through the thin walls as she said something about the collar of a shirt complimenting Amrila's skin tone, and as I stepped into the shower, I wondered how the two would get along. Ibsith was the sweetest person I'd ever known, but the horned woman seemed more guarded, and she seemed to fall apart if anyone was nice to her. I figured I'd have to let them sort it out, especially if Amrila took me up on my offer to stay. And then I got lost in the pleasure of hot, running water and began to clean the grime of the gloom off me. Tomorrow, or the next day, I'd go up to Cleveland, see one of the dealers Meyer had suggested, and sell off some of the gold coins. But for now, I just wanted to relish in some creature comforts. I could have stood in that shower for hours, but I wanted to make sure there'd be some hot water left for Amrila, so I turned the water off and wrapped myself in a towel. Then I stepped out of the bathroom and found the two women in the bedroom, where Ibsith was holding a pair of black leggings up to the red-skinned woman. But Amrila was smiling, and I took that as a good sign.
They are soft,
the horned woman said in a grudging tone.
But they do not seem practical. Why can't I wear my leathers? People here do not wear armor.
Ibsith explained as she handed Amrila a bright blue top.
There is no need for it in the above world.
Shower's all yours, I said from the door as I smiled at the two beautiful women.
What is a shower?
The red-skinned woman asked and frowned at me over her shoulder.
Only the most marvelous thing in the world,
Ibsith breathed.
It is like a waterfall that comes from the walls, but the water is warm.
I let Ibsith show the Zinkari woman the bathroom, and I listened to my wife's bubbly explanation through the wall while I found some clothes for myself. After a moment, Ibsith appeared again in the bedroom doorway, and I could hear the sound of running water in the next room.
Don't you dare get dressed yet,
the blue-skinned woman purred.
I have not properly welcomed you home.
I walked over to the curvy woman and wrapped my arms around her thin waist before I trailed my hands down to her round ass. I'd hate to deprive you of the opportunity, I rumbled. We didn't have long, since the small hot water tank would run out before long and Amrila would come out soon, so I pulled the white-haired woman against me as her large, firm breasts pressed against my chest. Then my wife's small, graceful hands found the edges of the towel and unwrapped it to reveal my already rock-hard cock. Ibsith pulled away a little, looked down at my erection, and back up at me with a blush.
Do Women also pleasure men with their mouths?
The elven woman asked, and her violet eyes were wide with lust and nervousness.
Like you pleasured me with yours the other day?
Yeah, I grinned. Do you want to do that?
You must instruct me in the proper way.
She replied with a shy smile.
I do not wish to disappoint you.
I led her to the bed, and then I sat on the edge as a strange electric excitement filled my core at the idea of teaching the innocent woman exactly how I liked my cock to be sucked. The white-haired woman's breathing also quickened with excitement as she knelt down in front of me, and her enthusiasm turned me on even more. I reached down and put my hands on either side of her heart-shaped face, and then I bent and kissed her deeply. Her pink, wet tongue moved against mine as she sighed, but I sat back after a moment and looked deep into her eager eyes. Take me in your mouth and suck gently at first. I rumbled as my breath started to come faster.
Like this?
Ibsith placed a delicate hand on my thigh and wrapped the other around the base of my rock-hard dick. Then she leaned forward and slid the head of my cock into her wet mouth, and a shock of endorphins surged through me. I moaned. Good. Now, move your head up and down, and use your tongue to massage my shaft. My sexy elven wife began to slowly bob her head as she continued to lightly suck, and the sensation of her tongue moving against me caused a little pre-cum to trickle from the head of my dick. Ibsith purred and started to quicken her movements as she tasted my natural lubricant. Wow. I moaned as I began to thrust my hips into her hungry lips. You're natural. The elven woman made small whimpers of delight as I drove in and out of her mouth. Fuck! I growled. Just like that, baby. Your mouth feels almost as good as your pussy. Now try relaxing your throat and take me in even deeper. Ibsith practically took my full length into her mouth and instinctively began to move her hand in small strokes at the base of my dick. When the elven woman began to suck harder, I could feel the pressure beginning to build in my core, so I moved my hand to her face again and gently pulled her away before she made me come. My cock came out of Ibsith's tight mouth with a slurping pop, and she looked at me surprised.
Did I do something wrong?
My wife asked as she licked a pearly bead of pre-cum from her lips. Not at all. I breathed. I just didn't want to finish yet. I reached down and pulled off her tight t-shirt, and the violet-eyed woman's massive and perfectly round breasts bounced when they were freed from the cotton garment. Ibsith wasn't wearing a bra, and I groaned at the sight of her erect nipples. I could still hear the shower running, but I knew we wouldn't have long before the hot water was gone, so I quickly lifted Ibsith to her feet, pulled off her leggings and panties in one movement, then placed my hands on her hips to bring her closer to me. I want you so bad. I snarled as I ran my fingers up her inner leg and inserted my index finger into her tight pussy. The white-haired woman was already dripping wet, and my finger slid easily into her tunnel. Ibsith keened, and her inner muscles contracted with pleasure as I worked my finger in and out of her. Shh. I gently breathed. Remember, we're not alone. You don't want Amrila to hear, do you?
No.
Ibsith giggled, but she didn't sound convincing. Then she wove her fingers through my hair and pulled my face to her magnificent breasts, so I nuzzled into those soft mounds of flesh and began to lick and kiss my way to one of her pert nipples. She gasped before she lowered her voice to a whisper.
You make me quiver, my love. I'm close to the moment.
Then come for me, I ordered as I nipped at her pointed ear.
Yes, husband.
My wife came with a sweet gush of juices that dripped down my hand between her legs, and my erection throbbed with desire as I lifted the voluptuous elven woman and threw her onto the bed. Fuck, I need you right now. I growled as I climbed over her.
Then take me, Eddie.
Ibsith sighed as she threw her arms around my neck.
Fill me with your seed. Pour it all into me.
I didn't need to be told twice. I thrust myself into her as she wrapped her smooth legs around me, and the two of us ground against each other as I growled in her ear. Ibsith mewled with delight, but she muffled her cries of pleasure with her hand. As I hammered my hips against the blue-skinned woman's tight body, she bucked against me with a wet slapping sound of flesh, I hoped wouldn't be heard over the shower. But there was no possibility of stopping or slowing down now. Raw, animalistic desire raged through my veins as I took my wife, and I could feel the pressure of an orgasm beginning to build again as the inner walls of Ibsith's perfect sheath tightened around me. "I want you to come for me," I commanded as sweat beaded on my forehead. "Come for me, Ibsith."
"Yes."
She purred beneath me.
"Yes, my king."
Stars exploded in front of my eyes as Ibsith raked her nails down my back, and I bucked my hips forward once, twice, and then a third time deep inside of her before the coil in my gut snapped. My seed sprayed like a fire hose deep into the elven woman as we came together, and her walls clamped down around me like a vice. I continued to rock our hips together as we came down from our combined highs, and the fluids of our orgasms flooded around my shaft as we panted in the aftershocks of our pleasures. Then I collapsed onto the bed next to my amazing wife, and she curled her lush body around me as we caught our breaths. "What a homecoming," I chuckled as I wrapped my arm around Ibsith and kissed her sweaty forehead. "Thank you."
"No, thank you for coming home again, husband,"
she said, and snuggled closer to me.
"I do not love when you have to leave my side, but if this is how wonderful all our reunions will be, then I can manage."
I glanced over at my naked wife, and my cock twitched as my eyes roved over her bare curves and supple flesh. But then my senses came back to me, and I heard the shower still running, so I knew round two with my wife would have to wait. "Come on, let's get up," I said as I gave Ibsith one last kiss. "We don't want Amrila seeing us naked."
"I do not think she would be so opposed,"
Ibsith mused as her violet eyes looked me over.
"You are a very handsome male, Eddie. I can tell she has lust for you. Maybe she can be your second wife. I really think she would be a great sister for me."
"Well," I laughed, "I'm not sure she wants to be my wife. But if she wants to see me naked, she'll have to ask first." After Ibsith and I got dressed, I heard the shower turn off. So my wife and I went out into the living room, though the glow on the elven woman's face spoke volumes about what we've been up to. Amrila came out a few minutes later, and she was dressed in the clothes Ibsith had lent her. The shirt fit a little loosely, and part of the horned woman's midriff was exposed, so I could see her washboard abs.
"Wow."
She sighed, and she stretched her arms up over her head and exposed the wonderful curve of her underboobs.
"That shower was amazing, isn't it?"
Ibsith gushed.
"Doesn't it just feel so warm and wonderful? It relaxes every muscle in my body. It's absolutely amazing,"
the succubus beauty said as she fixed me with her sultry dark eyes.
"It seems like Eddie lives like a king. I haven't even shown you the stovetop, or the computer TV shows, or the vacuum."
Ibsith giggled.
"Yes, Eddie is a king. King of my heart, and king of this surface world."
"I'm not really a king," I said as I grabbed the keys to my truck. "Most of the people on the surface have these things. We can talk about it over dinner. Let's go have a feast." The ladies and I went out the front doors as Dave Miller pulled up in his minivan, posing as an SUV. But as my neighbor got out of his vehicle and stopped to wave, the look on his face was priceless. His jaw dropped as he stared at the night elf and Zinkari woman, and I waved back with a pleasant smile. "Evening, David," I said as I opened the door for the women to slide into the front bench seat. When I started my truck, Amrila was startled, but then she laughed as I pulled out of the driveway and stepped on the gas.
"This is even better than a dwarven steam construct,"
the horned woman purred as she stroked my cracked leather seats.
"And so much faster."
I drove us to Illyria, where I knew a 24-hour diner that wasn't very crowded at this time of night. It was well after dinner time for most, and there wouldn't be another rush until the bars let out a few hours later. We walked in and waited for the hostess to seat us, but Ibsith and Amrila looked around at the old street signs and memorabilia that decorated the walls. Mostly, the diner walls were lined with pictures of country western stars and album art, and Ibsith pointed out a picture of Dolly Parton that she recognized from Grandpa's vinyl collection.
"She is an amazing songstress,"
the blue-skinned woman said to Amrila.
"But she seems very sad."
The hostess came up then, and her eyes grew wide as she looked at the three of us.
Is it just the three of you today?"
the young brunette woman in a yellow company polo shirt asked. "Yep," I said with a smile.
"Okay,"
The hostess replied as she grabbed three menus.
Follow me, please.
The ladies and I followed the hostess to a booth in the corner. I noticed a few odd looks from the handful of other diners at the restaurant, but I didn't care. This was my life now, and I would just have to get used to the stairs. It seemed like a small price to pay for all I had now. In less than a week, I got a house, a beautiful wife, a small fortune, and now a smoking hot hunting buddy. It was almost an embarrassment of riches. Ibsith, Amrila, and I settled into the booth, with me in the middle and the women sitting on either side of me, as the hostess handed us the menus.
If you don't mind me asking,
the young brunette woman said as her eyes darted between us.
Is there a convention going on somewhere nearby?
Nah, I chuckled. We're just really into cosplay.
Oh.
The young hostess replied.
Is that the one where you go out in the woods and fight with pool noodles? My kid brother does that.
I think that's LARPing, I said.
That sounds right.
The hostess nodded.
Can I take your drink orders?
The young brunette bustled off to get our pop a few moments later, and I looked at the two incredible women with me. So, what looks good? I asked and pointed at the menu.
First,
the horned woman said as she leaned forward.
What is cosplaying? It is where humans dress in elaborate costumes and pretend to be someone or something else.
Ibsith explained and bounced in her seat with excitement.
That just sounds silly and frivolous.
Amrila scoffed.
Oh, not at all.
Ibsith replied with wide eyes.
Cosplayers are artists. They make the most beautiful and complex costumes. They are very talented. I will show you these videos on Eddie's computer. They are very fun to watch.
Well, I do like fun,
the red-skinned beauty said as she gave me an alluring smile.
But, Eddie, I can't read this menu.
Yeah. I chuckled, but before I could explain what everything was, our waitress came up to take our order. The woman had the hard edge of someone who'd worked in the service industry their whole life and had no plans to do anything else. She looked like she was in her 50s, with bright red dyed hair that was curled to within an inch of its life.
I'm Tammy, I'll be your server today,
the redhead said as she pulled out a pen and tiny pad of paper.
What can I get for you?
To Tammy's credit, she took in my companion's strange appearances without batting an eye. Tammy, the waitress, had seen it all, and she was over it.
Eddie, you should order for us,
the blue-skinned woman said as she flashed me a smile.
You know the most delicious foods.
Yeah, I don't know what any of this is.
Amrila waved her hand at the menu.
Oh,
the older waitress said as she showed the first sign of interest in our group.
Where are you girls from? You have the most charming accents.
I was about to make something up, but as I opened my mouth, Ibsith answered first.
We are from the old country,
the white-haired woman recited with a proud smile.
Europe,
Tammy asked as she cocked her head to the side. Yeah, I confirmed since I wanted to change the subject quickly before the line of questioning went any further. And I think we'll just get one of everything on the breakfast menu.
Oh my,
the redhead said, and she grinned when she realized her 15% tip was going to be a good one.
You sure you ladies can eat all that?
Tammy chuckled at her own server humor, but Amrila sat up straight next to me.
There will be nothing left on the plates when we are done,
she declared, and the red-skinned woman's voice rang with a challenge.
We got a sassy one here.
Tammy smiled as she collected our menus.
I'll put this in and start bringing out plates as they're ready.
Once we were alone, Amrila turned back to me with a smirk.
You say you aren't a king, but you have such a fine house,
the horned woman commented in a sly, husky whisper.
Hot shower, the toilet thing that flushes shit, you have magic weapons, and you can order half the food in a tavern. I think you are a king.
Eddie is as modest as he is kind,
Ibsith said as she looked at me with adoring eyes.
He likes to pretend he isn't wealthy and does not like to boast. I love that about him.
Well, I blushed slightly at the lady's assertions. I'm doing better than I ever have before. That much is true. Soon Tammy started to bring out plate after plate of food and made sure to refill our pop whenever it was low. And the two women and I happily tried a little off each plate. There were stacks of fluffy pancakes soaked in butter, crispy bacon and juicy sausage links, biscuits smothered in a rich country gravy, and eggs every way an American boy could want.
You will enjoy these, Amrila.
Ibsith giggled as she passed the Zinkari woman some of the pancakes.
Where is the syrup, Eddie?
Oh, man.
I said around a mouthful of sausage. You're gonna love this. They have different flavors here. I showed the women the four small bottles of warmed syrup, butter, maple, strawberry, and boysenberry. The ladies tried a little of each, and Amrila and I agreed that the maple was the best, but Ibsith's favorite was the boysenberry. True to her word, Amrila spurred on the elven woman and I to make sure every plate was cleared of food, and the three of us were full to bursting by the time Tammy came back with the check.
I told you there would be none left,
the black-eyed woman said as she lifted her chin proudly and then belched delicately.
So you did, sweetheart,
the redhead snorted.
I hope you three enjoy the rest of your night.
I paid the check and left a 20% tip. The way I saw it, if my family was going to be unusual, having a reputation for generosity would make people feel more welcoming.
I don't think I've ever felt more full,
Amrila sighed once we all got in the truck, and she patted her washboard abs as if she was carrying a baby.
I'm going to sleep for 2 days now. Eddie, you really know how to show a woman a great time. This is only the start,
Ibsith cooed.
Wait until he uses his mouth on your womanhood. It will make you cl-
I think you'll have to sleep on the couch, Amrila. I interrupted Ibsith. I hope that's okay.
It will be fine, Eddie,
Amrila said as she gave me a wide smile.
I could sleep on a boulder right now. I'm all warm and relaxed everywhere. This is one of the best days I think I've ever had in my life. Aww,
Ibsith sighed.
I know how you feel, Amrila. Eddie takes such good care of us.
I tried to ignore my blush when both of the women sighed and looked at me, but Amrila and Ibsith soon were distracted by all the billboards and stores we saw driving home, and I had a great time explaining to them why there were so many mattress and tire stores in the various strip malls. By the time we got home, we were too full and tired to do much of anything else, so I set Amrila up on the couch, and Ibsith and I headed to the bedroom. As we laid down, I wrapped my arms around the beautiful, curvy woman, and then I pushed my face into her long hair. I missed you, I said, as I breathed in the clean scent of her hair. I thought about you every minute I was in the gloom.
I missed you too, beloved,
my wife said in a sleepy voice.
But it is good you went on your adventure. A man like you must explore and seek your fortune, and you've brought home a fine new wife.
I don't know about that, I chuckled. Amriel is great, but she doesn't strike me as the settling down type.
She is enamored with you,
Ibsith said as she snuggled into my chest.
I could tell she felt lust for you when we first met, but during dinner, she stared at you the entire meal and she doted on your every word. Not every wife has to stay home and keep the house. If you are to have many wives, each one must serve a different purpose. I am content here, taking care of you and eventually your other wives, but Amrila is strong and fierce. She could watch over you when you are away from me and fight next to you. I would feel much better with a wife like her protecting your flank from all the danger in the gloom.
Sounds like you have it all figured out, I teased and kissed the top of her head.
I am happy to help you pick wives,
Ibsith said.
That is often the place of the first wife in the Yeni tribe. I will run the household. Amrila will be your warrior wife. There are many jobs that need doing to run a proper household.
I think Amrila will have a lot to say about that, I grinned.
Surely she will,
the elven woman yawned.
That is what makes her a good choice. A man needs someone to disagree with him sometimes, if only to give him the opportunity to examine his own thinking. I am no good at disagreeing, and you will need her. I don't think she will disagree about this, though. When I showed her the toilet, she asked, "This is Eddie's." And when I showed her how the shower worked, she said, "This is Eddie's." Women need a man who will provide for them, and she is very smart. She knows you are worthy to be her king and husband.
We'll see, I guess. I laughed, and then the two of us fell asleep. I woke up late the next morning to the smells of Ibsith cooking and fresh coffee and the sound of old country records playing, but I laid in bed for a moment just to soak in how good life was before I got up and got dressed. Then I looked at my clothes for a moment as I decided what to wear. I wasn't usually the kind of person who put much thought into clothes. Most of the time, jeans and a t-shirt were good enough for whatever I had going. Maybe a hoodie if it was cold out. But today, I had business in the city, and I wanted Meyer's jewelry dealer to take me seriously. I didn't have any suits, not even for a wedding or a funeral. Never had any need for one before. I owned a couple of plaid button-ups, but I thought that'd make me look more like a hick than just wearing a nice pair of jeans and a plain shirt. Why put on airs? As I came out into the kitchen, my beautiful wife stood over the stove, minding several pans filled with eggs and thick slices of sizzling ham, and wearing her tiny maid's outfit that barely contained her magnificent breasts. The blue-skinned woman greeted me with a kiss and a cup of coffee, and once again I marveled at how awesome my life had become in such a short amount of time.
It is almost ready, my love.
The white-haired woman purred before she turned back to the stove with a look of absolute contentment on her face. I stood behind Ibsith for a moment and kissed her on the top of her head and pinched her ass. The elven woman giggled before she shooed me away with her spatula, and I moved into the living room. Amrila was lounging on the couch, sipping on a mug of coffee. She was still dressed in the black leggings and blue shirt from last night, but her strawberry blonde hair was tousled from a good night's sleep. The curtains were all drawn to block out the bright morning sunlight, and I sat down on the other end of the couch and sipped my coffee. "How do you like the surface so far?" I asked as Loretta Lynn began to sing about life in a holler.
"It is far too bright,"
the horned woman said and rolled her eyes.
"But Ibsis said you get used to it. It is quite comfortable, though. I especially like the shower. The noise the toilet makes is a bit strange, but I like how it doesn't smell. Yes, you have a nice home, Eddie. I really like it here."
"You've mentioned it before," I said, as I took another sip of steaming coffee. "But you're free to stay here as long as you like. You really saved my skin a few times in the gloom, so I figure it's the least I can do. Plus, Ibsith really seems to like having you around."
"That is because she is too sweet to know better."
Amrila laughed.
"I do not tend to stay in one place for very long. All my life, I have only been able to rely on myself, and I preferred it that way. However, I can see you need my help. You are a brave man and a capable fighter, but you are also reckless sometimes. I suppose I can stay, for now, if only to make sure you do not get yourself killed."
A delighted squeal suddenly echoed from the kitchen, and then the elven woman bounded into the living room and threw her arms around Amrila's neck.
"I am so happy that you will stay!"
Ibsith giggled as the red-skinned woman desperately tried to keep her coffee from spilling.
"We shall be like sisters!"
From over my wife's shoulder, Amrila shot me a look of mild annoyance, but she put her free arm around Ibsith to return the hug all the same, and I laughed. Then Ibsith turned to me with a business-like expression.
"We will need to get a bed for the spare room,"
the violet-eyed woman said in a serious tone.
"A woman needs her privacy in a space of her own, until she becomes your wife, and then she can sleep with us in our bed. I didn't say anything about marriage!"
Amrila squeaked as she held her hands up.
"But you love Eddie already, I can tell."
Ibsith laughed as she hugged the other woman again.
"Just think about how beautiful all our babies will be. Oh, I can't wait to meet them all. Can we just talk about... what the fuck are we talking about?"
Amrila gently pushed Ibsith away, and then the beautiful red-skinned woman gave me an embarrassed smile before she bit her lip. "We'll set up another bed," I said as I scratched my chin. "Which reminds me, I need to go to the city today to sell some of the coins. I spent a good chunk of the money I have on hand putting up that fence."
"Sell coins?"
Amrila asked.
"For what? Other coins? From what I can tell,"
Ibsith said to the horned woman with a smile,
"the currency humans use is all imaginary. They pay for goods with colourful little cards and never barter. Is it a tenet of human culture to overcomplicate everything?"
The red-skinned woman laughed. "Kinda," I chuckled. "Do you ladies want to come with me?"
"Oh, no."
Amrila shook her head.
"Not for as long as that ball of fire is out. I would be blinded as soon as I left the house."
"I will stay and keep Amrila company,"
Ibsith offered with a sprightly grin.
"We can get to know each other better."
Despite her prickly demeanor, I saw a small smile cross the horned woman's face. Amrila probably wasn't aware how much Ibsith really wanted to make the red-skinned woman my second wife, and honestly, I hadn't made up my mind about the idea either. Obviously, I could see the benefit of the sort of arrangement the elven woman had proposed, but the concept of polygamy was still kind of strange to me. But Ibsith seemed happy with the other woman being in our home, and that made me happy, so I would leave the idea alone for now. After breakfast, I grabbed the small chest of gold I'd taken from the orc bandits. Then I kissed my wife and said goodbye to the woman, got in my truck, and started toward Cleveland. I had to admit, knowing the Zinkari woman was there with Ibsith made me feel better about leaving for the day. The neighborhood was safe enough, but I still worried. But with Amrila around, I knew nothing would happen to my sweet, gentle wife, so I could definitely see the value of keeping the smoking hot Zinkari around. I stopped for gas on the way into the city, and I looked up the address of the jeweler Travis Meyer's secretary had emailed me. Owen McElfrish owned a shop called St. Dunstan Fine Jewelry in Coventry Village, and I knew Coventry was a sort of arts district filled with art galleries, niche boutiques, and vegan restaurants. seemed like a good place to sell some gold. As I was leaving the gas station, I passed a display of sunglasses and hats and thought of Amrila's complaints about the sun. I picked out the biggest pair of sunglasses they had that were black, with cheap rhinestones on the cat's eye frames for Amrila, and a slightly smaller pair of dark purple ones for Ibsith. The hat selection wasn't the best, but there were two white-colored, wide-brimmed, wicker straw-type hats that looked pretty cute. I wasn't sure if either of the girls would like the gifts, but they would probably help out a lot with the sun. I took a while to find parking near the jeweler's, but I was able to find a spot a half block away and put some time on the meter. I paid for 2 hours because I wasn't sure how long it would take, and the last thing I wanted was a parking ticket. I walked down the street and found St. Dunstan's in a charming brick storefront. The sign outside the store was black with gold lettering, set in a stylish font, and when I walked in, there was a musical chime that played, and I looked around at the long glass display cases with expensive jewelry and crystal statues arranged on black velvet. Next to the door, there was a young, muscular security guard who nodded at me as I passed. On the belt of his black uniform was a Glock in a leather holster, so I nodded politely back at him and walked up to one of the counters. The rest of the staff seemed to be all young, attractive women, and they too were dressed in all black, with tasteful gold jewelry to match the rest of the store's decor. I felt underdressed to be in such a fancy establishment, and a few of the staff stared at the weird little chest under my arm. When it became clear none of the posh women would willingly come to help me, I walked up to a brunette with a tight, slicked-back bun who had a serious case of resting bitch face. "Excuse me," I said with a charming smile. "I was wondering if Mr. McElfrish was in today?"
"I'm sorry,"
the brunette said with a smile that didn't reach her eyes.
"He's very busy. Can I help you?"
I really didn't like her attitude, but my pop had taught me you catch more flies with honey, so I wouldn't be deterred. If you could tell him Travis Meyer sent me, I'd appreciate it. I continued with the same amiable smile. I'm sure he'll want to speak with me. My name's Eddie Hill. I could see the haughty woman fighting not to roll her eyes as she looked at my plain white t-shirt and work boots.
One moment, Mr. Hill,
she replied. Then the stylish woman walked over to a black phone on the other end of the counter, picked up the receiver, and hit a red button. The uptight brunette made sure to speak quietly enough that I couldn't hear her, but after she hung up the phone and came back to where I stood, she was more polite.
If you'll follow me, Mr. Hill,
she said in a reserved tone. Thank you, I replied. The woman led me to the back of a shop and through a door marked Staff Only. I knew it was silly, but going through the private door was kind of thrilling. I expected the back of the store to be a workspace, not as fancy as the front. But instead, the staff door led into the hallway with a nice beige carpet and art hanging on the walls. We passed several doors, clearly marked with little black placards with gold letters. There was a staff lounge and a door that said Work Studio with an electronic lock. Then at the end of the hall was a door that said Mr. McElfrish. The brunette knocked quietly on the door. Come in. A male voice with a distinct Irish brogue said from the other side. The woman in black gave me one last tight smile and walked away. I took this to mean I was going in by myself, so I turned the knob and stepped through the door. The office was much like the rest of the store, decorated in black and gold and stubbornly modern. The black metal desk was faced by two black leather chairs with low backs, and there were a couple of sleek Art Deco statues of angular-looking dogs that flanked the leather desk chair where a short man was sitting. The man wore tight, black skinny jeans, a blazer, and a shiny dark gray shirt underneath. The gentleman had thick, dark hair, styled into a pompadour to give him a couple of extra inches in height, and he looked to be in his mid-30s.
It's nice to meet you, Mr. Hill,
the man said as he stood to shake my hand.
Travis said I might be hearing from you. Said you had some interesting pieces.
Just Eddie's fine, I replied as I shook the small man's hand. Thank you for seeing me. I probably should have called ahead.
Nonsense,
the dark-haired man said with a casual wave of his hand.
Any friend of Travis is a friend of mine. You can call me Owen. What do we have in the box here?
I found these on my grandpa's old property, I said, and I set the chest down on the desk between us. I wondered if you might be interested. I took out the key, unlocked the lid, and opened the chest to reveal the gold and silver coins inside. As Owen looked at the contents of the chest, I could see his eyes go wide for a moment, and then he scratched his clean-shaven chin and chuckled.
Well, that is a lovely sight,
the short man grinned.
Do you mind if I take a look?
Go right ahead, I said, as I took a seat in one of the low-back chairs. McAlfrish took out a couple of coins and sat back on his desk chair, and he pulled a rolled cloth case from a desk drawer. Then the short man unrolled the case on his desk to reveal a set of jeweler's tools and a magnifying glass. Owen went through a series of tests to check the coins for authenticity. He examined them under the light of his desk lamp with the magnifying glass, scratched at the edge of a coin with a small metal tool, and even bit one to check the softness of the gold.
These are 24-carat,
McAlfrish finally said as he sat back in his chair, took a deep breath, and raised his eyebrows at me. Is something wrong with them? I asked as my heart skipped a beat.
Absolutely not,
he chuckled.
It's basically pure gold. They don't make coins like this anymore. I don't suppose you know where they're from.
I researched them online, I lied. But as far as I can tell, no one knows where they're from. The markings don't match anything historic, at least.
That's fine, Owen replied. They'd be worth a little more if they had a historic value, but gold is gold, and if you melt it down, it's still worth plenty.
How much would these be worth to you? I asked. I wanted him to make the first offer. I'd looked up the price of gold before, but it was a hard thing to put your finger on since it was always changing and was based on more factors than I could count. But once he made an offer, I'd at least have an idea of where we were at.
We'll have to weigh out how much you have here,
Owen hedged.
But as long as they're all of similar quality, I'd give you 900 per ounce.
Current price last I checked is around $1,500 per ounce, I countered. I really hoped the number I'd recalled was for 24-carat gold.
Somewhere thereabouts,
the dark-haired man nodded.
But a little is always lost in the melting process, and then there's my trouble to consider. What would you say to an even 1,200 per ounce? There must be at least 30 pounds in that box, and I'll take care of it.
I did some quick math in my head and realized this meant McAlfrish was offering me over $500,000. That was a lot of fucking money, and my mind started to spin like I was sitting on a top.
Holy shit. Holy shit.
I realized I might be able to argue more over the price, since he was keeping three of the market price while I got 1,200. But this was more money than I thought I'd ever see in my bank account, and I didn't want to risk fucking the whole thing up trying to play hardball with the guy. Over $500,000! Holy shit! All right, I said in a voice that sounded way calmer than I actually felt. Deal. It was possible I could have gotten more somewhere else, but part of the price was the fact that McAlfrish wasn't asking a lot of questions or making me wait for ages as he tested every coin. I didn't have to be skinflint about it, because I had more treasure sitting at home and access to the gloom right in my backyard. I'll get a hold of Meyer, I said as I stood and shook the short man's hand. He'll handle the money for me, if that's all right with you.
It's the usual way,
Owen said with a sage-like nod.
He mentioned you might be able to find more of this. If you find anything else, feel free to stop by any time.
The dark-haired man led me out of his office and to the work studio where he weighed the gold in front of me. Then he piled the coins onto an electronic scale, and it all came out to 472 ounces, which was just slightly less than 30 pounds. I knew the chest had been heavy when I lugged it through the tunnels, but I was impressed by how close Owen's estimate had been.
So, that's $566,400,
McAlfrish said in a professional tone.
I'll have one of my girls write you a receipt for your records. We'll let Travis do his magic before anything is made official, though.
McAlfrish saw me out of the store, and we stopped at one of the counters long enough for the smug brunette to write my receipt. By the time she was done, the woman in the black dress looked like she'd swallowed a lemon.
Any time this young man shows up,
Owen said to her in a grand tone,
you just bring him back to the office.
That was the icing on the cake for me. Once I got back to my truck, I sat there and blinked for probably a good half an hour as the shock of the deal cascaded through my body. Finally, I got my shit together, dialed Meyer's office, and got a hold of his secretary. Hey, Alice, I said into my mobile, and I noticed that my voice was shaking.
Mr. Hill,
the plump woman said affectionately on the other end.
How can I help you today?
I wanted to let Mr. Meyer know I sold some gold to Owen McAlfrish.
I'll put you through.
As I waited for my CPA to pick up, I got into my truck and waited in the driver's seat so I wouldn't be driving while on the phone. Mr. Hill, Travis said in his usual deadpan tone, how are you today?
Pretty good, Mr. Meyer.
I chuckled. I just sold some gold to Mr. McAlfrish. Really? Meyer said with a hint of surprise. How much? $566,400. I said. I almost couldn't believe the words. Congratulations! My lawyer gasped. I'll contact him right away and have your money ready for you in a few days, minus my fee, of course. Of course, I said as I smiled from ear to ear. Sounds good. Then I hung up the phone and headed back to Westhurst. It was early afternoon by the time I got back into town, so I stopped by the dollar store and grabbed 3 lawn chairs before I swung through the drive-thru and picked up a case of beers. The ladies and I had something to celebrate. In a few days, I was going to be on the path to being as wealthy as Ibsith and Amrila thought I was. Holy shit. $500,000 wasn't exactly uber-rich, but it meant I was well into upper-middle class and on the path to wealthy. I could fix up the house, buy my girlfriend's nicer clothes, and buy top-of-the-line guns and equipment for my dungeon dives. Everything was going to be fucking awesome. When I got home, I pulled into the driveway, grabbed the beer and the chairs out of the bed, and headed up to the front porch. The trailer was sparkling clean when I walked through the front door, and the 2 beautiful women were sitting on the couch, laughing at the same fantasy movie I'd shown Ibsith a few nights before.
Why are all the elves so tall and pale?
Amrila snorted, and she seemed nearly in tears with laughter.
Why do they all talk like idiots? I know!
Ibsith agreed.
But it is a good story. The tall, dark-haired man is so romantic.
You two look like you're having fun. I smiled as I came through the door.
Oh, my love!
Ibsith grinned, and she got up from the couch to help me with my armload. If you don't mind getting these in the fridge, I said as I handed my wife the beer, I'm going to pull out the old grill in the shed and get it cleaned up real quick. We're going to cook out, drink, and celebrate.
What are we celebrating?
Amrila asked as she also stood to help out. Turns out, I am kind of a rich man, I smirked.
We already knew that,
the horned woman said as she took the folded chairs from me. We set everything up on the front lawn, and shortly I had 3 steaks sizzling on the grill with an ice-cold beer in my hand. Ibsith and Amrila lounged in 2 of the lawn chairs and sipped on their beers for all the neighborhood to see. They both wore the wide-brimmed hats and sunglasses I'd bought for them, and Ibsith had changed into flower print leggings and a tight white t-shirt from her maid's outfit, which I convinced her was probably not appropriate to be wearing out in public. A few of the neighbors came out and stood on their porches to stare, especially the McMillan boys, but we didn't care. It was a perfect summer day. I had 2 gorgeous women with me, and plenty of beer and food to satisfy me. As I looked at my double-wide trailer, I didn't see the rust and chipping paint. I saw it for what it really was, my very own castle on top of an endless dungeon that was filled with adventure and treasure, and I planned on getting incredibly rich by exploring every inch of it. End of book 1.